Accession number 31414.
Mike Uni, Reel 2. Okay.
I called them that's the army, but they were not.
And so again, this is a quiet period for you, even though to the north, had the invasion started of Poland in the north?
Well, the Germans were pushing rapidly, actually, it was obvious. And there were some resistance, Polish resistance, and even in the air, the old double-deckers, what you call them, used to play the role in there. But I don't know what would have happened if the Russian had not interfered. We probably would have lost anyhow. But it was only natural. We were not in conditions to make any effort, but any resistance, give any resistance to the German push. And
Was there a feeling of betrayal by the West? Did you think, where are the British? What about the treaties we signed? What about?
Well, it's we were sort of wondering why some at least the less experienced probably people wondering why the British don't start move, don't do something. But they did. They actually on the third day they asked German to stop it. They put some words, but no arms. And that's again that's the result of not being prepared, not being ready for the thing. The same with Poland. We were not. We knew a few months before that the war will probably start. Once they start push in Czechoslovakia and Austria, then we realized that. But that was too late anyhow. And whatever would have happened, we could not have been resisted the push, the attack of the Germans. They were all armored divisions and Messerschmitt, the Air Force, and of course especially Stukas. These were the danger, and they started immediately. The first day they started to bombard all the main cities and aerodromes and stations and whatever.
In the north of Poland.
In the north of Poland.
So, but where you were, it was quiet.
That was, I was just absolutely delicious time. We had delicious time because the sun was shining. It's a beautiful part of the country, and we really enjoyed that. We didn't feel the war, really, but, we did. But
I mean, the news came from the north that the Germans had entered Poland, yeah. I imagine.
And that lasted 17 days, that sort of affair. And we knew from radio and so on what was happening to the rest of the Polish western part of Poland and Warsaw especially and so on. But on the 17th of September, I had a call from my superiors, officers, telling me that the Russians have crossed, moved into the Polish territory from the east, and moving fast westwards direction, and may come to your place in 2 or 3 days. So in that condition, they say, well, you better send your troops who are on the hills, to Hungary, and yourself overnight move to a place called Vorochta, where the other officers, where the commanding officer will be there, and then together you will be cross to Hungary.
So this was in effect in order to surrender, not to resist.
No. So of course I phoned up the people on the border there. You just slid down, go to Hungary, and that would be that. The Hungarian didn't expect us to do that, so then they were caught on the hop. And anyhow, we marched with the rest of the troops, we marched all night from Jabiye to Vorokhta. That was about 30 miles. We reached Vorokhta at about 9 o'clock in the morning, and we met all the others. They were there already there, and we had a breakfast or something like that. And about 11 o'clock, we moved towards Voronyenka. That was crossing point for us to Hungary, and we reached the about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And there was hardly anybody there. There were one or two officers and one or two soldiers, Hungarian. So we moved there, and they say, all right, you move further on, about 2 miles on the left-hand side. There is a big field. And go there and wait for the rest of what we are going to do with you. So we moved there, and there was some. The only thing that we were happy about was the military kitchen there. So we had a cup of coffee, black coffee and black bread, you know, the sort of military bread in there, and stayed there overnight. Nothing happened, and there's more and more troops who would come in there. But at 11 o'clock next day, the lorries came along and took us inside the Hungary.
What was the feeling amongst you as Poles? It must have been absolute...
Oh, absolutely.
Desolation.
That was terrible feeling, disappointment and but some of the people stayed back, didn't want to go, and stayed back, and they were probably wrong. They'd done the wrong thing. Unless even Hutus were suffered because of that. Some of them were in the Polish army, Hutus as well.
They stayed back
stayed back, naturally. It was only natural for them.
To fight the Russians.
They stayed there, and of course the Russians came along, and some of them, when they've learned they were in Polish army, they were cruel to them, really cruel. Very, very, very bad thing happened. Anyhow, so we went to Hungary, and next day they were taking lorries, and the place you were taken to was called Hidas Nemeti. And that used to be village that was on the old border with the Czechoslovakia. And there were the barracks, military barracks, and so we went put in there. There was nothing in there except water, running water that was there. But one or two chairs and nothing else. We were not surprised, because they are not very better off than Polish people. Anyhow, we managed there, and the only thing was that there was a kitchen was on there working, and we had some supper there. Usually black coffee and black bread. But the Hungarians were unusually friendly. Very friendly. They felt they've done something that they shouldn't have done. That was my opinion. Looking at them, they were sort of sheepish, you know, not that. Anyhow, they were very friendly, and they tried to help us in any case. To the extent that whilst at the beginning there was a guard around there, but later on they didn't bother about that. And we used to get right to go to wherever we wanted to do, to Košice, especially. There's a large Czechoslovakian town there. And I remember we used to exchange Polish zlotys to pengos, Hungarian, 10 zlotys per 1 pengo Hungarian. That was all right. You got something there. And but the only thing that I think affected me more than anything else was the fact that a fortnight after we've arrived in the Hidas Nemeti, in the place there, I was suddenly called to the gate. There was someone wants to see me. When I came to the gate, there was my girl standing. my future wife. She was not, she was fiancé. And she was the one who worked in the official, in Kosovo-Futurski. She worked in the civil office there and had lots to do with the Hutus. And it appeared.
It's okay, now we'll just forget about it. Go, yeah, go on, yes, interesting, yeah.
And it appears that they helped her to get across the border.
The Hutus.
Yes.
She knew you were down there.
Yeah, that's
you were
right.
In Hungary.
And she went. And it so happened that she was very lucky. She came to the first place closest to the border. That was where I was. So there she was standing with the Hungarian officer there, commanding officer actually, by the gate. And of course I was pleased. Not only that, but he already find her a place where to stay. And that was the station master there. And so he took, I went with him, of course, and she was there, and I had a right to visit her anytime I want to, no difficulty whatsoever. So I visit her, and we spent a lot of time. We used to go to Košice by train. It was also easy because there was a station master. So I had more luck than anybody else. And not only that, but then something else happened. One winter time, I had received a letter from my brother who was in Esztergom, another camp there. And he said, could you join me? So I went to see the... he said, yes, you can join. And then he came along, so the whole family was there in the place there. Then, of course, right from the beginning of our stay in Hidas Nemeti, we talked about getting out and joining Polish army then in France. And there was a committee there, they organized everything else. So winter passed, and in March 15th, I married my girl.
March 15th, 1940.
That's right. I married her, and there was a Catholic church there. We were married, but we didn't stay together very long, only a few weeks. Then my turn came to move out and start the journey.
So people were escaping,
time, yes.
And the Hungarians, what did they do?
Didn't bother. The only problem was there was some agent, German agent, and probably every day used to come to the camp and pretending to do pictures and that sort of thing. But we knew that they were. But Hungarian didn't bother very much about him. Anyhow, the time came along, and that was in 1940 already, and end of April, we moved out. My wife, my brother, and myself moved out by train to the Budapest to report to the office. We had an office there, immigration office.
It was so official. I mean,
Hungarian didn't bother about that. They had to watch the Germans, and they did interfere on certain occasions. So end of April, we came to Hungary, and we went to Polish embassy. Yeah. Still existed. Whether they were officials or not, I don't know. But we went there and we were directed to. And my wife got a place in the Polish hostel, Esztergom. Well, so we await. And she secured a place for her there. And the afternoon, I embarked the train to going towards the Yugoslavia then, and we moved out, and that was afternoon. we traveled out half a day to the border. Then some of the chaps were there, agents, and they say, come out. And they've taken us to a place outside the village there. They say, you stay here, and until midnight, you'll be taken to the border. And the border was a river was there, Drava River was there. We had to cross the thing. So it was 11 o'clock when we started. Marched toward the river. There were hundreds or something of us then.
All Poles,
yes. And we moved towards the river, and there was a bark barge there waiting for us, and there were a lot of people there, and the barge was almost up to the brim in the water. Anyhow, we managed to get through Yugoslavia, and they were all right. They were Croatians, actually, then. And we moved to the river Drava to the other side and marched, I think, about a mile and a half to a farm. Fortunately, the farm was surrounded by high fence there. There were already some people in there, and of course they brought us in. We spent the night outside, just leaning against the fence there. And the day, they had given us some bread and something like that. And in the evening, when the dark came along, they said, all right, the carts came along, and horse-driven carts, and say, yeah, you go there, you'll be taken to the station. And indeed, we were taken to the station, and the train came along, and we were spread, not in a group and all that, and we embarked on the train and started our journey to Zagreb, that's Croatia. Zagreb, and it lasted, but it's what a short distance actually there. And when we arrived in Zagreb, I think it was midnight or something like that, they took us out, and we didn't stay in Zagreb itself. They took us outside Zagreb to just to a hotel.
You keep saying they. Who were they? This is quite a well-organized network of to get,
oh,
the,
absolutely.
Polish,
absolutely.
Get the Polish out of,
that was
out of
the,
Hungary.
First-class organized. But that's thanks to the Hungarian, really. They didn't bother to sort of interfere with the thing. Anyhow, yes. Not only to the extent, but even tickets, railway tickets, and that was ready for us. So as you say, it has been well organized. Anyhow, we stayed in the hotel in this outside Zagreb 4 days, about 4 days, and then again, 4 or 3 or 4, we were led to the station, not the main station, but the station before Zagreb, and we embarked it and moved it and. From there, we moved to Belgrade, that's the Serbian capital now. And there, again, we, in train, one would have expected some sort of inspection. I said, no, nothing at all.
You had Polish papers, but you didn't
Polish
have...
Polish people, I mean, they did outstand. Some of them had some military uniforms, in trousers or whatever. And so we moved to Belgrade. And then again we got out, and again the same system. They moved us, didn't keep us in the town, just in a hotel outside. But it didn't bother us. We moved. Next day I moved to town and visited the town and the scene and so on. So again, about 4 or 5 days later, the same procedure. But this time we got on the train in Zagreb, because it was a fast train going to Greece. So we traveled quite a long time in the train.
We're now, I'm just trying to make sure we don't lose the time. This is now probably June 1940.
The May, we in April we started there, so that was still May.
Mid-May,
actually.
And was there any fear of German agents? Did you speak Polish to each other?
Yugoslavia, that's gone. We feared the German agent in Hungary, but Yugoslavia, not really. Later on, they actually went to Yugoslavia, the Germans. But at that time, no. Anyhow, we started from Belgrade. We started our journey to Athens, to Greece. And I never forget the railway covered with red poppies. All red. Never in my life have I seen so many poppies on. Anyhow, and on the other hand, you could see the Carpathian Mountains still with, and covered in snow. Beautiful, beautiful sight. So anyhow, we went to Salonika. We crossed the border, Greece. No problem whatsoever. To Salonika, changed the train in Salonika almost immediately, and went south to Athens. There we were placed in a hotel in Athens itself. No problem. Beautiful hotel, and we enjoyed that. And we stayed in Athens about a fortnight, if I'm right. And
okay.
We stayed about a fortnight in Athens. We visited some famous places, the Parthenon and Piraeus. That's the port. And in the fortnight's time, we were told that we are start our journey to Beirut. So the ship that was allocated to us was a luxurious ship. That was the Romanian Constanța. Well, the Constanța, you know, that is a port on the Black Sea, on the Romanian stuff. And we started our journey. Lovely. That was still in the shape that used to take the passengers. And the food was marvelous, except that we couldn't eat it because the sea was rough and most of us were sick. Anyhow, we traveled several days, and by the end of May, we arrived in Beirut. Beirut was then a French colony. Beirut, by way of the Lebanon and Syria, these were the French colonies then. And goat meat was the lunch, as heartless as you can imagine. Anyhow, we had it. We reported, we were organized there, and again, we stayed there 2 or 3 days, and then we were sent north. We were sent north towards Aleppo. Aleppo, that's the town near the Turkish border. Before that, there's Homs, is the Arabic town.
Homs.
And that's where we landed, the whole shooting match there. And we marched about 2 or 3 miles, again, to outside Homs. There were new-built barracks, wooden barracks. And not very far were barracks, brick barracks, where we learned the Foreign Legion at home. Anyhow, well, that was the place where the Carpathian Brigade was organized.
How interesting. So, I mean, this extraordinary route down from Poland through Hungary and heading away from the war, but you always thought your ultimate destination was...
Well, the ultimate destination, we always thought that we were going to France. Not until the last stage, Piraeus, where we learned that we are going to Beirut, because some Polish brigade is being organized there. Because previous soldiers all went to France, but not this time. This time we went to Beirut. And of course, we started our first dresses, the French uniforms, and that sort of we were given. And winter uniforms, actually.
And this is the height of summer. And you were near Homs, or you were near Aleppo now? You're in Homs.
Homs, yes. Well, that was Aleppo. It's
close by. Yeah.
Aleppo, you probably know, was the place where all the pipelines, oil pipelines, were going from Syria, from Iraq, all the. And oil was loaded onto tankers there.
In Latakia, yeah. The town on the coast. Where, yeah. Yes, I know. So you form the Carpathian Brigade, and the French that are there are obviously sympathetic.
That's I'm going to tell you all the story about that. Anyhow, we formed, we started the training, and the funny part was that we were given mules. You know, to carry the kitchen equipment. So, of course, if you're going to do this, you've got to train them to see what happens. And that was the funniest day in my life, when they put these things, the kitchen equipment, on the mules. They started there. War themselves, running all over the place, banging, God knows what. That was fun, really, really fun. Anyhow, we were trained there to get ready. But something happened, and that's the Vichy Agreement between France and Germany. And the commander-in-chief of the military in Syria changed his mind and told our commander, lay down your arms and disappear. That was a problem. But we were lucky in so that the Foreign Legion, almost half of them were Poles. And the commander of the battalion of Polish Legion was Polish officer as well. So and we spoke to them, he said, we are on your side. And then our commanding officer went, Stanislav Kopański was his name, and he was colonel then, went to see the Mr. General. Mittelhauser was the name of the French officer in charge there. Went to see him and said, we are not going to the zone, but we leave Syria and go to Palestine. So he was very pleased. Not only did he allow to go out, but he also supplied us with transport, both train and 30 lorries, two tanners, Citroen, actually, I remember. 30 lorries gave us, and some other stuff. So we crossed the border. We traveled over through Damascus and so on to the border, to Tiberian Lake, you probably, that was the where the border is. And also we went there and stayed on the Tiberian banks of the lake. That's where the Christ used to walk on the water.
I'm just going to do this. My